Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Okay, so this is Café Europa.
Café Europa, I think it's wonderful. It's some place to meet people from your own generation.
Café Europa has existed since the 1980s. It began in America. It was named after a cafe where Holocaust survivors met in Europe.
And sometimes they have very nice programs, and sometimes it's a little boring. Joe, he's the comedian here.
My name is Joe Wiesner.
What's the draw for you?
They have some good-looking women here. The food is okay also.
My original name is Monique because I come from France. I am also a Holocaust survivor.
You are?
I am, yes. We are all Ola.
In Holland, I was in hiding from the age of 6 weeks.
You mean this war now? Yeah. Yeah, everybody talks about it. Just, it's so awful. And it's like, it never stops for the Jews. They're killing the Jews. They hate the Jews.
Yeah. Our grandson was serving in the Gaza. He was Miluim, they called him in, and he was there for a while. Wasn't doing much. And then they released him, so now he's home.
So if you know the songs, I invite you to sing with me, and if you don't and you just want to relax and enjoy them, I hope that you enjoy them.
Let it be, let it be.
This is like a Fabringen without the vodka.
Well, there's been an answer, let it be.
Hey, listeners, it's Mishi. So as you know, we're continuing our series of wartime diaries, which is our attempt to capture different experiences of this terrible war. The horrific stories of October 7th reminded many people of the darkest chapter in Jewish history, the Holocaust. And indeed, there have been as many comparisons to the Shoah as there have been critiques of those comparisons. There are about 130,000 Holocaust survivors living in Israel today. Just under 10,000 live in Jerusalem. And many of them participate in the Jerusalem Foundation's Café Europa. Café Europa offers not only a physical meeting place, but also a whole range of social and cultural activities. Concerts, lectures, memorials, workshops, as well as professional help in navigating the thickets of Israeli bureaucracy. We spent a morning at the Café Europa branch in Jerusalem's German colony. There were all kinds of opinions about the Holocaust comparison, but the person with the strongest feelings on the matter just so happened to also be Café Europa's oldest member, Walter Bingham. A few weeks later, Mitch Ginsburg and I visited Walter, who is the oldest active journalist in the world, in his home in downtown Jerusalem. Walter greeted us at the door, welcomed us in.
Hello, Walter. Nice to meet you. Mishi.
Who?
Mishi Harman. Hi.
Hello. My name's Mitch.
Hello. Are you the boss there?
And started by giving us a tour of his study.
This one here is in his president's home. This is King George VI, Buckingham Palace. A bravery award from World War II. Montgomery signature here. It's from 1944. This is the highest French honor the French can give anyone, Légion d'honneur. You French?
No.
No. And there are two here which are Guinness World Records, the oldest working journalist in the world and the oldest working radio commentator, show host. This one is honorary. Actually says I'm a black belt Krav Maga.
Ah, are you a black belt?
No, I'm not a black belt. I am no belt. I'm Walter Bingham, and a week or two ago I celebrated my 100th birthday, which means I'm now in my 101st year of life. I feel good. On a good day I feel like 40, on a bad day like 50, and today is a good day.
And Walter, I know that it's an impossible task to summarize 100 years in a short answer, but can you tell us a little bit about where you were born and sort of the story of the stations of your life?
Well, I was born in Germany, obviously 100 years ago, which was 5th of January, secular date, 1924. And at age 6, I started going to school, which was before. That was Weimar Republic. And for 3 years, I went to school before Hitler came to power. And that was okay. You know, I got the ball in the, like everybody else in school. We didn't have a Jewish school there. And then Hitler came to power and everything changed. Of course, the children that I went to school with, their parents were the people who voted for Hitler. So obviously they were indoctrinated. And life at school was very tough. I was sitting next to a German boy, an Aryan boy, and he copied my work, as one does at school. He got good marks and mine were bad. And when I lifted my finger to answer the question, teacher's question, I wasn't called anymore. Because I'm not saying I was right, but he couldn't take a chance that a Jew knew something. And so it went on, and eventually I had to sit in the back of the class, and you know what kind of sign that gives. That means do with me what you like, and they did. Then we were thrown out of school because they couldn't expect the Aryan children to have to sit with a Jew in the class. And that was the kind of atmosphere. And at 15 and a half, I left with a kinder transport. Some went to foster parents, others went to hostels. The lucky ones had mishpacha, and that they had a family. And I went with a religious Zionist youth movement.
To the English countryside?
Yeah, yeah. And I went in the British Army. I was 4 years a soldier. You see, a British soldier went into the army because he had to. He was called up, he has to go, or he wants to fight for his country. Now, I had no country to fight for, certainly not the Germans. And I've only just come to England, not all that many years before. So not my country. To this day, not my country. And our motivation was not to fight for a country, it was fight against the Nazis. So therefore, we refugees did a lot more risky things. I mean, what I did is small to compare to what some others did behind the lines. We had a motivation to finish the job and get the Nazis. So when I landed in the water on the beaches of Normandy driving an ambulance, I was initially an ambulance driver, and I went through France, Belgium, Holland, and I always said to the army, look, anybody can drive an ambulance with some training. I speak German. Surely we're going into Germany, you need some German speakers. And eventually, just before a very big battle that was disastrous for Britain over the river, bridge over the River Rhine in a place called Arnhem in Holland, just before that they transferred me, otherwise I wouldn't be here because I know myself, I would have gone where the shit was flying, excuse the language, I would have gone where the action was. They transferred me from the battlefield to an office at Oxford Circus in London. A secret office over a department store, one of the Oxford Circus corners, where I was trained as a document specialist and in counterintelligence. And then I came out of the army on the last day of 1947, when I went to the demobilization center and they gave me a coat and a suit, and here's your railway ticket, goodbye. There was no aftercare. No post-traumatic stress care that everybody does today. And I had suffered under that, I suppose. And then one day, an emissary from Israel found me, and he said, look, you're an experienced soldier, come, we need you. And I said, I had a bloody war right up to here, I'm not going. And then I was in London, and I got married eventually, and my wife liked England. What do you do if your wife doesn't want to go? So I'm stuck.
And you spent the next 50 years there?
Yeah, I was in London working in the journalism and radio, and then my wife died in 1990. After that, my daughter made Aliyah, so I wanted to be, I thought that I should be somewhere where she is, because I'm getting her on. And then I decided it's time for me to come as well, so that we're all together here.
Mm.
Because I was getting old, getting on for 80, old, and today I'm 100.
So for the last 2 decades, you've been here in Jerusalem. And Walter, where were you on October 7th?
I was getting ready to fly out of the country on October the 8th.
How come?
The organization March of the Living have organized a trip to relive the Kinder transport. So they chosen 3 people from that Kinder transport. I was one of them. And if it hadn't been this important subject of telling the world about this, if it hadn't been something like that, if it had been a pleasure trip, I would never have left my country. Absolutely not. I felt very uneasy on the 8th of October to leave the country.
I guess we were curious though, Walter, as somebody who fled Germany as a youth on that Kinder transport, to be back in Germany, what did it feel like in your head?
Things came back to you, you know, you remembered. I mean, the Germans did terrible cruelty. Don't want to describe it now, and you can't describe the cruelties that the Hamas did on the 7th of October. But the big difference between the events in Germany and the events here in October, October the 7th was an indescribable, cruel event, but it was not the Holocaust. The Holocaust was a state-organized event. The October the 7th was organized by a terror group. Yes, they were ruling the Gaza Strip, but there was not a state. They were a terror group. And there's a big difference. So you cannot compare it with the Holocaust. Not the Holocaust. The Holocaust was a... well, I don't have to explain it. It was quite a different event. A Holocaust was an organized killing machine over a very long time. October the 7th was a terrorist attack of the utmost cruelty. But we have a state of Israel. But with all our mistakes, we could prevent it going on, and we are able to fight those terrorists, and we are doing it right now as we speak and defeating them.
So what do you feel when Bibi and other people talk about the Hamas's Nazis, or the Israeli ambassador to the UN wears a yellow star to the Security Council?
Well, I was appalled that he wore a yellow star following the event in October.
Why?
Because it diminished the impact and the event of the Holocaust.
Walter, let me ask you, as somebody who lived through more history than most people, what does it feel like now at the age of 100 to reach this moment, which I can imagine is tough because there's a general sense of hopelessness and of despair and of sinking into violence and stuff like that. What do you feel that?
Look, old people in Café Europa say, oh, the good old days. The good old, nonsense. They were not the good old days. I would love to be young today. Today is the days to live. So I think we are living, unfortunately we have some problems here, but we are living in an era which could be paradise. I see a wonderful future. We are not going anywhere. We will defeat them all as we have done in the past. It will be sometimes more difficult. Unfortunately, it will cost us lives. But the country is more important than the individual. And here we get into the question of the hostages, which is a terrible thing. I mean, if it went for the hostages, the war would be over in 8 days. But the country is first, and the individual is second.
And what's your role in all this?
Look, I would very much like to go and do some military service, like something like being at a marsom somewhere, what do you call it in English?
Checkpoint.
At some checkpoint where I could, not on the front line. I would love to be at some checkpoint, and I think I could handle it.
Now, today, at 100?
Yeah, I think I could handle it.
But I want to maybe look, if you can, a little bit ahead. How do you see the immediate future for the country, for Israel?
Look, there were the Roman Empire, the Greek Empire, the Chinese Empire, the Byzantine Empire, the Ottoman Empire, the British Empire. Where are they? All gone. And what? We are here. And we'll always be here. We're going nowhere, and we are flourishing, and we will defeat them all as we have done in the past. Look, they're telling us today, the civilians, that we are not caring for the civilians in Gaza. I remind them of Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Dresden, 1,000 bombers in 2 days dropped 3,000 bombs, including incendiaries, and burned half the population of Dresden in Germany. And Nagasaki and Hiroshima, there were no terrorists there. The soldiers were on the front and the women and children were at home. There were no terrorists there. And you didn't care about civilians. Don't tell us. And I hope that both President Herzog, Prime Minister Netanyahu, Defense Minister Yoav Gallant will have told Anthony Blinken, the American, where to get off. Don't interfere with us. La la la.
שתישאר צעיר לנצח לה 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 שתישאר צעיר לנצח שישמור אותך אל ויגשים משאלתך שתעשה בשביל אחר והוא למענך שתיגע בכל כוכב ותטפס על כל שלב שתישאר צעיר לנצח שתגדל להיות צודק שתדע לראות האור ולמצוא את האמת בתוך החושך הגדול שתמיד תהיה חזק אל תשחק את המשחק שתישאר צעיר לנצח לה 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 לה
תישאר צעיר לנצח. שיהיו ידיך עסוקות וצעדיך מהירים, שיהיה ביתך יציב מול רוחות השינויים, שבלבך תהיה שמחה, שישירו את שירך, שתישאר צעיר לנצח. שישמור אותך אל ויגשים משאלתך, שתעשה בשביל אחר והוא למענך, שתיגע בכל כוכב ותטפס על כל שלב, שתישאר צעיר לנצח. לה לה לה
Walter, are you afraid of dying?
I'm not ready for it. I have a lot of work to do. I'm not ready. I feel immortal. The only time I realize that I'm old is when I pass a mirror. My inside knows it's old. Inside my body knows it. But I'm not old. Am I afraid? I love life. I lead a very interesting life, a happy life.
Are there any dreams that you have that remain unfulfilled?
Any dreams? Yes, I have dreams to have a nice young girlfriend, but it's not materializing.